Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Takes a shot, scores! And it's a big win for the Sabres here on this power play. Jiří Tulík with the overtime winner! Shorthanded, Alex Tuck with a shot, scores!
3 for 3 on the trip, and right back at it tomorrow night on Thanksgiving Eve. Welcome into Sabres Live. Feels like it's been more than a week. But it hasn't. But it's been close, right?
It's been close. And this week, I got to get a little closer.
I feel like I'm so far from the camera there.
Sorry, wonky. I pulled.
No, yours and mine. We're a duo.
And last week we only had Tuesday, Wednesday of shows because of the bye week for the Bills. Our crew got a well-deserved couple of days to not be spending their full day, especially, and their night in studio. So well-rested for this week. And then it's Thanksgiving. So we only have today and tomorrow as well of shows because Thursday is no show. And Friday is a 3 o'clock game. So we're
not doing
Sabres.
Why do you not want to work ever? Like, why do you just take this route and take everybody with you?
I'm sitting here wanting to talk and nobody wants to talk with me. I'm just telling you the schedule. I'm not doing anything on Thanksgiving other than sitting and eating like most people. And Friday's
a
3 o'clock game.
Because you're going to be plowing.
No, I'll be plowing Friday after the game and Saturday and Sunday.
Early.
So it's the way it is. But yeah, so it does feel like a week because it's almost been a week. And then next week, Tuesday, it will feel like almost a week because it will have been almost a week. So that's the way it goes.
Thank you, Yogi.
It gets late early in West Coast. And the Sabres made it and shut the lights off on three teams on the West Coast, which was great. Tight games. Got to give... you know, like L.A., San Jose, Anaheim, they're due. They played the games tight. But without Tage Thompson, the Sabres have really found a way on the West Coast to just do enough, right? And I'm not saying they didn't play really well. I felt they played really well, but there was moments in games, like Anaheim until the late in the second period, and San Jose at times that it's like, oh, are they going to find the energy, right? 3-4 and all of that, the travel, going to San Jose. And they did enough. They found a way. This is a change. And I felt like that resiliency was definitely on display in those three West Coast games.
7-2 in the last 9. Name a team better in that stretch. More points.
Winnipeg.
Nope.
They don't have... Wow, they must have...
Since November 5th is the marker.
Okay.
That was the win over Ottawa. They're 7-2 since that night. Who has more points in that time span?
The Devils.
The Devils are 8-2 in their last 10, but only 7-2 in that stretch. So technically,
and Toronto, Toronto is only 7-2 in that last.
Toronto is 7-1 in that stretch.
Oh, okay, 7-1. So they've played one less game.
7-3-1 are the Hurricanes. So not even better. They just happen to have more points. So
they played
it's all
two
about
more games.
Context, right? Like it's just think of the size of this window, this sample size, if you will, all the different combinations and situations within it. Like it started with Tage, but hasn't had Tage lately. Mm-hmm. It started with Luukkonen, then he was absent for a little bit. And they went through what felt like an extremely long rough patch, even though it was only, I don't know, a week, right?
Yeah, where three games.
The week started with the Montreal game. They lost.
Yeah.
They had a rally to beat the Blues in overtime, and they had the loss in Philly. But for whatever reason, on the heels of the previous three-game win streak, it felt like a lot. And then flip the script, and here we are talking about a team that, since November 5th, despite relying on some really good goaltending, they've scored the 6th most goals in that stretch. They're averaging over 3.5 a game. So they've found a way, to your point, without Thompson, to do enough. And, I mean, they're top 15 offensively in the league. They're not close to top 5, which you predicted, promised.
I said, well, yeah, the first
But they're trending the right way. This is good.
Yes.
This is good.
This is good. And you say without Tage the last 5 games, and really – without Tage has an impact on one player, and that's J.J. Peterka. J.J. Peterka only has 2 assists in those 5 games. The last time he scored was the Montreal game. That's a game that Tage left in that game. But I'm looking at J.J. Peterka with Tage and J.J. without Tage. It's been a difference this year. So you know, when you look at practice today, it seems as though Tage will be back tomorrow. We'll get confirmation from Lindy Ruff after practice when he speaks to the media. But it does trend the way that Tage Thompson would be back against Minnesota, which would, in my opinion, unlock J.J. Peterka a little bit. It's been a little tougher for J.J. to produce without Tage Thompson. But Alex Tuch has been great. Jason Zucker has been great. Ryan McLeod's been great. Like, there's, and the defense of Byram and Dahlin, especially on the power play. Like, you have to look at it and say, the Sabres are 7-2 in the last nine. They're 4-1 in the five games without Tage Thompson. They're finding a way. And yeah, you ask me, who's the MVP of the season so far, a quarter of the way? And I said, Tage and maybe Alex Tuch. And you looked at me the other day on the pregame and were like, wow, like Luukkonen, right? But yeah, Luukkonen's a big part of that. But mm-hmm. so is Reimer now in the game that he played and was really good in San Jose. So I think that they found a way to just have something different come through every game. It's not been one factor. It's been little different factors all the time, which is great for coaching staff.
The power play's been quiet the last two.
Exactly.
But they got a shorthanded winner in San Jose.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, well, yeah, Tuch comes in again. Mm-hmm. That's why I say Alex Tuch has been great. And I know you know, we're not talked about it a whole lot when it looks as the four nation rosters for the tournament, and they're going to have to be named here in about a week. But I would put Alex Tuch on that USA roster right now because of the element of penalty kill, strength, power forward, all that. Like, he is like very, and I don't want to compare him to another player, but I think Sam Reinhart, and a lot of people are saying Sam Reinhart has a spot on Team Canada because he's different. I think Alex Tuch, what he's shown me now is he has an element of difference, right? In a different aspect of the game. 5-on-5, he can turn it on. Penalty kill, he can turn it on. Power play, he can play a different role. Net front, side, whatever. There's a lot to Alex Tuch that I am loving now. And so we'll see if that translates into him earning a spot on Team USA for the Four Nations faceoff.
The only thing different about Sam Reinhart is that he has scored more than everybody else in the league since the start of last year.
That's
including playoffs.
Difference. That's a big difference. But in the way that Sam
has done it. So if he's
not
on the team, then that's a joke.
Sam Reinhart's on the team. Sam Reinhart is on Team Canada. But because I think you got to look at Alex Tuch and say, hey, could he... Is Alex Tuch earning himself a spot on that team where maybe other American players are not performing as well? Yeah, I think he could be.
You know what just popped into my head?
What?
Dreger reporting on a situation like this when quoting Pierre LeBrun.
Yeah, according to our insider, Pierre LeBrun, but they work together, yeah. So they also don't want to compete in the stories, right? So that's one of the things. So,
but who knows? I mean, here, well, I'm okay. I can't really do it in trivia now because you know half the answer. But Alex Tuch, because of Sam Reinhart's colossal failure to extend his own personal point streak last night, Alex Tuch and Anthony Cirelli are the current active point streak leaders in the NHL. Both are riding six gamers, both have 9 points in that stretch, and both have done it dramatically different ways, with Cirelli scoring 7 times, including goals in all six of the streak. And Tuch has scored 3 while setting up 6. So interesting nonetheless. And to your point about the league-wide Johnny Gaudreau tribute this year, the 4 longest point streaks this year, all 13 gamers.
Well, that I told you there was going to be a lot of those numbers that were going to come out this year, especially after the first month when it was Cole Caulfield and it was Heischer and it was the other 13.
Nico had his first hat trick last night, a natural one for the Devils.
So. Yeah, well, the Devils have played more games than anybody else in the league right now. They sit at 24 games, but they've performed really well, and they're doing it without really the goaltending that you would expect, because I think Jacob Markstrom has been average at best. Average at best. The numbers point out that he's probably in the 40 to 50 range when it goes to goal save above expectations. Like it's, but it doesn't matter because the Devils and Sheldon Keefe has been able to find a gear in their way. But look, okay, because we're, you know, talking about every team that's having success, and the Sabres should be talked about in the same category now. Like, okay, you know, the three-game winning streak, it followed a three-game losing streak, and then it got followed by a three-game winning streak. But since then, Lindy Ruff has mentioned, let's not slip away. Let's not let it go. The Sabres lost heartbreaking games to Montreal, heartbreaking games to the Flyers, in ways, in games that they did not play well, and they did not dwell on it. Like, those were wins in my...
Heartbreaking against Philly.
Was that?
Heartbreaking? Heartbreaking it's snatched from defeat.
Okay,
or, like, so, snatched away at the last... Like, they were never in the Philly game.
Yeah, no, I say heartbreaking in the way that... Maybe it's not the right word. Like, you would... I look at my sheet. If I expected them to win those games, they didn't, right? So it kind of kicks you in the face a little bit, right? You didn't win a game you should have won. But it could have... You could have dwelled on it. You could have, you know, made excuses. And Lindy Ruff, the biggest thing he said when they went, and now I've been on a little bit of a streak, is we're not going to lose two in a row. We're not going to lose two in a row. That three-game losing streak, you know, they were 4-4-1. And a week later, they're 4-7-1. And then all of a sudden, they're like, where are they going? Mm-hmm. And then they get to 7-7-1, and they lose two, and they're 7-9-1. You're like, okay. You cannot have that happen. All the time you get to 500, you take two steps back. Mm-hmm. They've not taken steps back now, especially on that road trip. And it puts them two games over 500 now, which is a good first quarter.
Yes, but if you look at the overall standings, even with this impressive run of 7 wins in 9 games, granted, it has elevated them from a very, tough position to be in, which was closer to the bottom.
Yep.
Now they're wild card two, but, and this is why I'm trying to use the word could and never should, because I don't look at a schedule and say they should win this. They could win it. And then in hindsight, when the game's over, you say in some situations they could have won it, but I will never say they should have won it. And I will refuse all year long to suggest that Philadelphia is not in the same category. I've been saying it since last year. Like, I don't know what management was doing in Philly last year when they utterly just walked away from a playoff season. And like, it is the dumbest, honestly, dumbest thing I've seen an Eastern Conference team do in recent memory. They were a story last year, and they somehow like almost prevented their group, their core group, from having a shot at the playoffs. Anyway, enough of the rant. They are actually, in my mind, still underachieving. They're 2 points behind Buffalo. But if you look at the guys on that roster, Tippett's got 4 goals. Farabee's got 3. Morgan Frost is in and out of the lineup. If you had said that they are this good, despite beyond Sam Ersson, questionable goaltending numbers, but the beauty is they are in every game. They go to overtime all the time. Mitchkov is a star. There's no question about it. And, like, so, sorry
well,
for
the
digression, but I'm never going to say they should beat Philly from this point on.
No,
it's game. Somebody's going to win, and Philly is full value for where they are in the standings.
It's the NHL, right? Like, look, San Jose beats LA 7-2 yesterday.
Six goals in the last 26 minutes.
Exactly, right? And it's like, it's San Jose, and they didn't even have their best player in Mikael Granlund on the roster. But you know what? It's the NHL. You players are good, right? And that can happen. What made Philly good last year to a certain point and stand, you know, afloat until very late? And what has made them what they are now? When you talk about Fedotov and Kolosov, has not been great in that, but they still getting results. Is their structure. John Tortorella, I've played for Torts, and I know their structure comes first, and it's always going to be the backbone, the foundation of that team right now. Travis Konechny is doing things that are amazing. Great. Travis Sanheim is doing things that are amazing. It's the structure. A team like Montreal, I feel like, have so much talent. They have zero structure. Now, they beat Buffalo 7-5, but they're all over the place when you look at structure. And now, what is the factor for the Sabres' recent success? We're getting a wave of response now on social media saying Lindy Ruff. And I think that the structure of the Sabres and the way that they play has been much better, which you can now overcome a Tage Thompson absence or even your star nut goalie, Luukkonen, not playing a game because mm-hmm. your structure is what is starting to shine in the way that you're able to play and get results. Maybe that's just winning 1-0, but winning 1-0, if your structure comes through, it makes a big difference.
Well, give more examples to people that need to hear it, don't need to hear it.
Okay, well,
some are already on the Lindy train, right, and have been since Lindy arrived as a player. But this is a great opportunity to take the recent run of success and explain what you've seen that Lindy has done to really help them get to this point.
So there's two things. That's a great question. That's how you start answering questions these days. That's a great question, Duffer.
Stop stalling.
There's two reasons for that, okay? Yes. One is that you don't change the way you play. Doesn't matter. Like, they're down 2-0 to Anaheim. You don't change the way you play. You keep playing the same structure. Defensively, you're going to be, you're going to play better. But I think the defensive zone coverage is something that Lindy Ruff has always prided himself as a coach on. But you're going to stay the course. And that makes a big difference. Because then all of a sudden, you get one goal and you're like, hey, it works. It works because we didn't change. We didn't cheat. We didn't cheat. Our structure is going to help us get there. That's one thing. Two is because the structure, everybody understands and knows how to play the game. So now in the third period against Anaheim, Lindy Ruff makes some line changes, right? Mm-hmm. But it doesn't slow you down. It doesn't take 10 minutes for you to say, hey, we finally got to our game because the line changes, it kind of scrambled things up. No, everybody knows how they're supposed to play. So if you and I, Duffer, always play together, and then third period starts, not playing together.
When do we get broken up?
Well, I don't know. We got broken up in the third period in Anaheim, let's just say. Okay? But I'm going to play with Jeff, producer Jeff. Well, I know how producer Jeff is playing because everybody's playing the same way.
Does he shoot?
He's a righty. He's a righty, and you're a lefty. So I know that. But
the only reason I ask is because you never know.
I don't know. I don't need to know because, again, I know which way he's going to play. I know where he's going to be, and I know what the structure is going to be. So if we change the lines, we're not going to have to wait 10 minutes for the lines to click and say, oh, okay, now we get going because we know how we're supposed to play. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of wiggle room.
Well, if you're going to go there as far as like lines and line changes, think of the entirety of this 9-game stretch, wins of 7 in 9.
Yeah.
And think of how different at times the defense core has looked throughout it. Joki Haru sat for 6.
Yeah.
Samuelson was in, then got hurt. Gilbert was undefeated until the Philadelphia game. But honestly, like, Bryson has stayed in. I don't think a single fan would have expected Jacob Bryson to maintain this run.
And he was playing top four.
And it's nothing against Jacob Bryson. It's how you view pro sports and contracts and dollars and minutes played and impact potential and otherwise, right? Mm-hmm. It's crazy. You could not have predicted the usage of the defense core over this stretch.
He was playing with power as a top four defenseman. And you had Clifton and Gilbert and Samuelson. And then you had Joki Haru come in. And then Joki Haru, I feel, fit in perfectly with power as a top four. And I think they've looked good. Power is now, you know, like, again, the assist and, you know, the points at 5-on-5. But I think the way that the defense has been playing, again, it comes down to structure. I don't see defense chasing anybody at the top of the zone. I don't see, you know, circling and not knowing where you are. Everybody seems to know where they're going. And look, are they keeping it simple at time? Yeah. They're going flip in the neutral zone or they're going off the glass and out. And at times I'm like, oh, like, okay, they're flipping pucks. Like, come on now. But it's not in your zone. At least you're not like you're not getting caught and turning the puck over 25 feet, 30 feet away from your net. Like if you're going to give it up, well, give it up 80 feet, 100 feet away from your net where you have time to recover from that.
Yeah, and this is not sitting here saying, well, like Bryson's going to stay in. Obviously, everything is fluid. But like his first game of the year was the loss in Detroit. Yeah. And that was disappointing because they gave up two and, you know, there was frustration from the coach and how those goals happened. But he stayed in the lineup for the Ottawa game. So he's been in 10 in a row. It's interesting just to see the usage. His first game, he was at 13 minutes and he was up around 19 a few times. On the trip, he was 11, 15, and 11, right? So yeah, it's yeah. just, it's one, this is all, you know, discussion worthy to a certain extent, only because it takes like all 18, right?
But also, Bryson was 11, 15, and 11 because Yoki Aryu got put back in the lineup and Bryson went from second pair to third pair. Yeah. But you know what? If you need him to play 17, 18, he's done it a few times and mm-hmm. wins this year.
Yeah.
It's not like all of a sudden, Bryson had to play 18, but we lost and we can't have him play that much. He's responsible enough to get it done. He's got wheels. He can skate enough to get it done, which mm-hmm. has been a big asset for him to stay in the lineup now.
Shannon Goldman is coming up. There's a million and one stories in the NHL to get to, so it's going to be really difficult to do that. But this is like a Shana 2-for-1 Tuesday because we didn't have her last week and we're not going to have her this week in her regular spot. So we get one instead of the two, and we're going to try to maximize every opportunity there. And there are certainly some crazy, you know, results around the league of late that have people wondering about certain teams and what's next, because obviously when a domino as large as Phil Tomasino falls in the NHL yesterday, like the floodgates are going to open here on the trade front. Is there a roster freeze for Thanksgiving? Because I'm feeling like we're on the edge of, like scorched earth across the NHL in trades between now and Sunday.
I sense a little sarcasm.
Really?
When a fourth round pick for Tomasino gets moved.
Didn't help the Predators last night.
I'll say this.
They stink. Honestly.
Here's the thing. You're talking about teams that stink. The New York Rangers have been stinky of late.
Here's and the now,
catch, what was the
catch? Rangers started 5-0-1 and they've been 500 exactly. since. The Predators started 0-5 and they've been 500 since. So they're still.
But the Rangers, because of the stinky nature of one of my former team, now the Trouba conversation is in the news cycle about the Rangers are looking to trade Jacob Trouba, and the Chris Kreider conversation is in there. The Rangers may be looking to move Kreider. I'm saying
modified no trade. Two more years, already 33.
Modified no trade.
Yeah, but 15-team list.
Yeah, but if I'm the other 15, I'm trying to acquire Chris Kreider. I think
no
he's
chance.
Still...
Shana's going to put that in perspective. Well, his 5-on-5 game obviously hasn't been great. That's why this comes up. He's an elite special teams player and still has numbers to match that. But obviously the frustration with the Rangers right now is based at 5-on-5 among some of their big players, right?
I think the Rangers are flawed. I think Peter Laviolette has always been able to have a structure that is a man-on-man defensive zone coverage. Worked for him when it was with Nashville. He got to the finals. It always has worked for him. But I think teams are figuring it out now, and the Rangers are flawed because of that, and it's hurting Chris Kreider. Kreider is more of a penalty killer type of mentality, straight, like, my zone, my coverage, man on man, he gets lost, and that's not helping him. So that's why I would take him in a heartbeat. But maybe Shana will help clearing me out.
Name an Eastern Conference team that has a better record against the West than the Buffalo Sabres.
Ooh, I'm going to say the Washington Capitals.
Nope, they are tied. Both
because
are
I
7-1.
Beat Vegas twice, so
both are 7-1.
Okay.
So Buffalo is best versus the West. Name a Western team that has the best record against the East.
The Minnesota Wild.
It would be the Minnesota Wild. That sets us up nicely for tomorrow's matchup on Thanksgiving Eve, full of gravy, full of boats, right in the harbor. It's like the Boston Tea Party, but with gravy and here on the shores of Lake Erie. Like, honestly, tomorrow is going to be amazing.
I'm gonna get a gravy boat. I'm coming in early to grab one of the gravy boats.
Okay. Here's my promise to you. If the Sabres score 9 or more, I am bathing on air in gravy during the post game. I'm serious. You can pour the gravy boat all over me.
I will. If they score 9 or more.
I will.
Listen, if they're at 7 at some point, I am going to go on the Jumbotron and announce that everybody, if the Sabres score 9, you know how they used to have the promotion, like you get the 4 goals, everybody gets a free coffee or something. I'm going to go announce it on the Jumbotron.
So we can have a gravy station next to the Northtown 50-50 station. So when people on their way out of the 200 level, they can scoop up the gravy boat full and come over and douse me.
Yes.
This is going to be amazing. There's only one person that doesn't like this idea, and it's Tammy, and she's cringing right now because she's responsible for all audio connections, and she's already worried that my headset is going to get fried in the gravy.
Duffer, we're going to put a chair on the side like when I do Bald for Box. We don't need you hooked up. We just need a camera on you. I'll do the play-by-play of you getting doused by gravy.
Yeah. Shocker. Marty just wants the mic to himself and wants to host the entire
post-game.
I
want to help Tammy. That's what I want to do.
Okay. So Thanksgiving Eve, 50-50. This is important. Head to the rink, but even if you can't, the special Thanksgiving Eve 50-50 presented by Northtown Automotive is now live with a guaranteed pot of $50,000. Visit sabres.com/50-50 to purchase your tickets or scan the QR code on your screen right now watching on MSG. Proceeds benefit the Buffalo Sabres Foundation. Shayna Goldman, next on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Rolling along on Sabres Live, we've got like less than 20 minutes with Shayna Goldman. Happy Thanksgiving, soon to be. Shayna, hope it's a great week for you. The champs are on the ropes. Florida's lost 6 of 7. What has happened to Paul Maurice's team?
Panthers, they're done. That's it. That is it for this year. No, you know what? There's a couple trends that stand out. One, the goaltending has not been great. They are allowing a lot more goals than they should be right now. I think the game against Colorado, obviously you go up against a team with a lot of firepower, but this is not a one-off thing. So that's one concerning trend. The other thing about it is their offensive creation has been continuously trending down as the season goes on. Sometimes that's what happens, right? When a team has a lot of success, why fix what isn't broken? And yes, they had early season injuries, and I think players tend to overcompensate, and then you get those players back and you think we'll just be fine. It hasn't been the case. So those are two things I'm noticing, and now they're not finishing their chances, so it makes that lack of offensive generation look even worse.
Are the Carolina Hurricanes okay if they don't have Freddie Anderson and Pyotr Kochetkov for a longer period of time? Because Kochetkov got hurt the other night, and now he may look at Spencer Martin. So are they okay as a team? Because they've had a great start.
Yeah, that is the big question right now, right? And you see, look at last night, and they go down, 3-1 to Dallas, and then they rally back. You know, goaltending wasn't the total issue there, but you could see the strength in their teams and their systems on both ends of the ice to come back in the game and take out a team like Dallas. And even when they pulled ahead, Dallas did tie the game back up, and they were resilient enough. Is that going to work moving forward? I don't know. And you look at this next stretch, they have, if I remember correctly, the Rangers, the Panthers twice, and Colorado in 4 out of their next 5 games, or 5 out of their next 6 games, whatever it is. That is a really tough stretch of opponents with a lot of firepower. So that's going to be a big test of it too, because to me, Spencer Martin isn't the guy. And you look at when he had an expanded role, which was Vancouver 2 years ago, he played 35 games, and he was pretty terrible, that I'm a little worried on that front. But on the other hand, this is the Canes. They're so good in front of the net that maybe it won't matter.
Yeah, I don't think the Canucks were very good then, for the record, but I will say this. There are 3 teams in the NHL right now that have 4 goals per game or more. Washington, 4.05. Winnipeg, 4.05. Carolina, 4.0, baby. They can score. They've won 8 in a row at home. Nature says 18 points in those 8 wins. It is remarkable. Oh, and oh, by the way, they still have Sebastian Aho. He's pretty good, too. Oh, and they also have Jack Roslovic with 12 goals, tied for the team.
Who knew?
What is going on there?
I'm going to say it's the blonde hair for Natchez.
Yes.
You guys know my opinion on that. You need a new vibe. I know he did it because he lost a bet, but you need a new vibe. You got to change your hair color and look at the magic.
excluding the Tomasino trade yesterday, which I referenced already, which team is more likely to make a big blockbuster soon? The Rangers, who have gone 7 up, 7 down, all in regulation over the last 14 games, or the Predators, who have gone 7-7-3 since an 0-5 start?
Good question. The Rangers seem like the obvious pick because of the reports coming out, but I'm going to say good luck making those deals because the players that were on the block, supposedly, I don't think they're actually going to move Chris Kreider and Jacob Trouba. We all know how this summer blew up in their face. He has a 15-team no-trade clause, and you're going to have to retain a lot of salary. So I just don't see how that can be done. I would say the secret weapon is Barry Trotz. We hyped him up all summer. That team is completely broken outside of special teams. Like, that 5-on-5 play is a disaster. So I feel like they're the more likely team to make a move, and it would be a sneaky move that we don't see coming versus, you know, projecting a move in advance just to get your team going.
Am I crazy that I would take Chris Kreider any day of the week and twice a Sunday on my team? Because I love Kreider, and I played with him a little bit, but I think he brings such an element, a little bit like Alex Tuck brings to the Sabres, and that physical straight line speed. There are some flaws, yes, but should teams all be calling the Rangers right now and say, yeah, we'll take him. If our team's not on his 15 no trade list teams, like, we'll take him.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a big fan of his game because you look at someone like Anders Lee, right, who's that elite net front presence, but you go, what else does he bring? Is he a play driver? Is he good defensively? And it's like Chris Kreider is all of that and more. And you've seen how his game has evolved over the years. He's a great penalty killer now. He never was in the early years of his career. He's a lot better defensively. Is he a little one-dimensional offensively in that he's a shooter, not a passer? Yes. But the speed and strength that he brings, plus that net front presence on the power play, is something everybody should want to have. For years, I felt like he would be a perfect fit on McDavid's wing or Dreisaitl's, but I would totally trade for him any day of the week. I don't think he's the problem on that line. Honestly, I'm going to take a deeper look at this next week. Okay. So this is like on my radar because I have thoughts and I don't know how true they are. I think the system in New York is part of the problem for that line. And yes. I don't think that they've adjusted their tactics enough to fit certain players. And two come to mind is Ryan Lindgren, who doesn't have the foot speed to play Laviolette's system, and Mika Zibanejad, who I think is being forced to play too much defense, and he's not getting freed up, and he's just struggling. His 5-on-5 play has been on the decline, and I think it's dragging everyone down on that line.
I said to Duffer, I said, I think the man-on-man Peter Laviolette defensive structure, teams are catching up to it. Like, it's worked with Nashville, and it's worked with the Rangers a little bit. But look at Marty St. Louis in Montreal trying to say, this is the system we're going to play. They're getting destroyed.
Yep.
Teams know how to hang on to puck, do the high cycle, make you chase them a little bit, and you got nothing left. And I don't, off the top of my head, I don't think there's a lot of teams that play that strict of a man-on-man type of system, but I think it's broken. I think the Rangers right now are broken defensively. If it hadn't been for Shesterkin or Jonathan Quick, they're probably not even in the playoff spot.
I'm 10 out of 10 with you, because how many teams run these systems? And it's not just that they're predictable, but like, we need more hybrid systems. We need a rise of hybrid systems where teams look at this and go, like, he might say, this is my system, I want to play it. That's great and wonderful. But if you don't have the pieces, you either need to get your general manager to get you pieces that will thrive in that system, or you need to make the adjustments to maximize your players within it. And the latter just isn't happening.
Who wins the Art Ross this year? A, Marty Natchez. B, Nathan MacKinnon. C, Kirill Kaprizov. Mm-hmm. Or D, Jack Eichel. Or E, someone else.
Okay, I'm going to say E, Connor McDavid.
What?
Because, oh! Yep, Connor McDavid's back. Okay, you look at it.
Oh,
I think I saw Mike Kelly tweet it out before. He's like leading the league in end-to-end rushes. And it's like, yeah, he's all of that and more right now. And once that secondary scoring gets going and he gets a little bit more support, you're going to see him just having more assists on a nightly basis, feeding pucks to guys like Pod Colson, who is thriving there. Yep. Hyman's going to hit his stride. That power play is going to get going. Like, I think he's going to jump back out. If not, it would be Kaprizov. The injury is the one concern for me. And also, the underlying numbers are not perfect, so I do worry about that in the long run. But to me, it is McDavid.
1 point is what separates those four players. That's why those four alone were mentioned.
But McDavid's only 7 points back. So for Connor McDavid, that's a week.
That's two games.
It could be. Although, I mean, we've been waiting for the Oilers to kind of make that move forward, and it hasn't happened. And I feel like McDavid's a little frustrated with Hyman, too. They played Montreal a week and a half ago. He gave Hyman a pass on the back door perfectly. Hyman missed. McDavid slammed his stick on the wall, like almost like, hey, wake it up there, buddy. I'm not going to keep feeding you these tap-ins. So that leads me to the next topic. Colorado gets blown out last night. Not Georgiev's fault. He didn't start, but he didn't help either.
Sure reacted to the one goal he did give up.
And, yeah. In the second period, they're like, yeah. Okay, you're done.
Oh, my gosh.
I think at that point, it was 6-1.
The stick just landed.
Yeah. But, okay, so Colorado, Edmonton, we talked about Carolina. Are we going to see goalie movement soon? Because teams need to make it happen. Don't wait until New Jersey, until it's too late, like they did last year.
Yeah, right. Am I going to have egg on my face saying yes again this year when it didn't happen last year? If you are a smart team, you're going to make the move sooner because goalies have a much harder time adjusting in season than they would in the off season. And if you do it at the deadline, you're only giving yourself X number of games. That's why we don't see it happen often enough. I don't think they necessarily need to go for that huge ticket goalie like the Devils did with Markstrom or the Ullmark deals, right? Detroit, do you move one of your goaltenders? Cam Talbot's doing really well. You still have Husso in Grand Rapids. Do you move Alex Lyon for maybe some help on defense? If you're San Jose, do you sell while Mackenzie Blackwood's value is as high as it is? Yeah. I would say absolutely, yeah, absolutely yes. And if I'm Colorado, I am totally going for a goaltender because heading into last night's game, they were the worst in the league in goals allowed above expected. Their defense is not this bad. Their forwards are doing what they can. They need help.
They are a tough one to read. Maybe not, based on what you just said about goaltending. Maybe it's only that. I don't know what it is, but they are incredibly up and down, as are the Lightning, who handled them last night, yeah. Right? As would be the Ottawa Senators. Like, what's happening in Ottawa? I mean, they get a much-needed win against a Calgary team that may never again score 4 goals in the course of regulation or overtime.
They haven't in forever.
It's like 18 or 19 games now, but their record doesn't, you know, come down from that. But what do you make of Ottawa? Like, are they on the brink of something? Like, if they don't flip this fully after this most recent 4-game losing streak, are they, do you see something big? A lot of people are starting to say, like, maybe they will finally move off of one of those core pieces.
I mean, I would be moving off of a supporting piece who is in a role that is out of his depths, and that would be Travis Habanek. I don't understand that one at all. But it's really wild to look at because when you think of the Senators before this losing skid, they were doing really well, right? Like, it was like you could see the improvements made by coaching. They were really good at defending the rush. The goaltending was a little bit tough, and Ullmark's injury added a little bit of, like, chaos into all of it. But it felt like they were trending up. And then apparently they decided to fall apart, specifically that game against the Oilers, when someone, not going to name names, was supposed to sit down and watch Shabbat and Jensen and see how well they've been doing as a pair together. And then the Bouchard goal happened and it was all downhill from there. So I feel like I cursed this team and I'm very sorry personally for doing that because I did not intend it. But it felt like they were on the right track until that. So, yeah, they definitely need some help. But I think that they have the right management and ownership and coaching in place to turn things around. So I'm not totally concerned like I would be in years past, but it's not great.
Forsberg got the win last night. Mm-hmm. Ullmark is sitting on an 881 save percentage right now.
And Linus has pointed the fingers at himself. He says, I need to be better and the team is battling and I'm not making a save. So that's step one for Linus Ullmark, obviously. Okay, Sabres have Minnesota tomorrow and Vancouver on Friday. And since it's Tuesday and you're making an appearance, what is the scouting report? Shayna's scouting report of Minnesota and Vancouver, the next two games this week.
Which will feature Paige Thompson. This just in.
Very big. Good. So you're going up against Minnesota and they are one of the best defensive teams in the league. It's the identity we know them to have, and it's totally back. My scouting report is to watch their top four. Brock Faber and Jacob Middleton have been fantastic together. You kind of look at it and think, what a bad year Middleton had without Spurgeon. last season, and I like that they went, but you know what? We could still try them in a different pair, and they are shouldering a heavy burden, and they're thriving. And then opposite of them in the top four is Brodin and Spurgeon together. It's like that old pair revitalized, and they have one of the best expected goal rates against. So those are the two lines I'm watching, two pairs I'm watching to go up against the Sabres' top two lines to see, you know, who could win that battle. You look at Winnipeg last night, and they really did manage to shut down Minnesota in the third period, but I think Minnesota's better than that game showed, and that's what I'd be watching for.
Well,
and Vancouver?
Vancouver, it's all about that top line. That top line is crushing it, and this is huge for the Canucks because we have been waiting all year for Elias Pettersson to hit his stride, and it feels like he's finally doing so, and he's doing so with Jake DeBrusk, who got off to a really slow start. Yep. They tried him with Miller and Besser, and it didn't quite work, and then they put him back with Pettersson, and now they're totally thriving together, and you look at that third member of the line, it's Kiefer Sherwood, who to me is your perfect bottom sixer. I don't know how he's going to keep up hitting, I don't know, seven hits on average a game, but he's shooting the puck a ton. He adds some depth scoring, and they're making it work while they're shorthanded, but they're going to get Besser back, so you can see that top six rounding into form, but most importantly is that first line is finally looking like a first line.
With currency equalization, Sherwood would have 11 hits per game while playing on the island. Winnipeg has won seven in a row versus Minnesota. That's why the Wild did not win last night. We referenced earlier that Minnesota has the best record against the East at 8-1, and Vancouver has the longest active road winning streak. They've won seven in a row going into Boston tonight before having Buffalo here on Friday. So those are things to keep in mind with those two teams. What is wrong with... Say, as I always do, I love Brandon Hagel. Thank you, Brandon, for the five-point effort last night. It was amazing. Warmed my heart. Four first-period assists. Marty, ninth player ever to do so. Can you name one of the nine?
Connor McDavid, Wayne
no,
Gretzky.
No, Wayne Gretzky. Obviously, Wayne Gretzky. Marty. Do you not know the answer by now?
McDavid is probably... I named a current and a retired player. I think both of them have done it.
The list is amazing. Check it out on NHL Stats. It's pretty awesome, but cool for Hagel that he had four first-period assists. The only question I have left for the two of you, are you guys off the Utah train yet?
I'm on the Korova-Melka train.
Yes!
The best goaltenders in the league in the month of November. I think it's seven.
If he stayed
games.
Anywhere close to the crease, I would agree. Put a
I'm fine
tether
with
on
it.
This
Bring
dude.
The chaos.
Oh my gosh.
I am fine with it. I say go, Carell. Enjoy. I love this. I'm writing the hypometer for Thursday, and he is on it because we have these 1B goalies surprisingly emerging as 1As, like him and Thompson. He's crushing it. He has some of the coolest masks, so he looks good doing it. I am all about this.
Yeah. My worry in Utah and I like him. Good guy. The Bear, Andre Tourigny. I mean, this is not a team that's going to wait in Utah and say, hey, Bear, we like you. You're a good guy. Like the other day, he calls a timeout against Toronto. And it didn't really, like, there was no spark. I feel like he's missing that spark with his team. And Utah is not going to wait for a spark to come back. So I'm worried about Andre Tourigny.
They should score more than they do. That's the challenge for the coach right now. And that's always
and
a tricky one.
They did it last year, right?
Yeah.
At least they're scoring a little bit for Vemelka. A little bit.
Oh, can I leave you with a trivia question?
Yes.
Which goaltender? Which defenseman is scoring at the highest goals per game rate in the NHL this season? Personal favorites. Okay, time's up. It's Jacob Chychrun. And that should not surprise anybody, but he's at 0.38 goals per game. Happy Thanksgiving, Shannon. We have to roll.
Thanks for having me.
May your gravy boat always be full. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Amazing hockey news for the city of Buffalo today. USA Hockey announcing that Lecom Harbor Center is going to host the World Para Ice Hockey Championship. This is an 8-team tournament, best sled players in the world, and it happens this coming May, the 24th to the 31st. Mm-hmm. 19 games, all taking place at Lecom Harbor Center. And if you weren't there the first go around, when Harbor Center was brand new, let me tell you, this event is unbelievable. And I'm so glad that it is back here in Buffalo in the late spring of 2025.
Yeah. And I was there and I got to witness it, and it was awesome. It's fast. It's physical. It's impressive. It is definitely something you should go and watch. Even if you're not a hockey fan, you're just a sports fan, go watch it, because it's different. It's a different type of game, and it's definitely entertaining. Very entertaining.
Last note goes to you. We got less than 10.
Well, can't wait to see Tage Thompson back in the lineup against Minnesota tomorrow. We'll talk about it on Sabres Life tomorrow.
Yes, it's a game day after all. We'll see you then.